ladies and gentlemen, honorable members, shall we allow ESCOM to respond? Over to ESCOM. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. There's, as I calculated, 38 questions minus one. That's 37. So what we'll do is we'll answer all of these questions. We'll answer them clearly, concisely. If you need clarification thereafter, then that's a separate issue. Where we have to get back to you because we don't have the detailed information, we'll also let you know. So I'll just go in order. What commitments do we have with the major off-takers in terms of them signing up that they're actually going to have the power was the question, and have they been asked to fund? In terms of have they been asked to fund, as this committee is aware, one of the funding options we looked at last year was to introduce private equity into Casile, and we found at the time, whether it be locally or internationally, that it was a very expensive option because of the returns those investors would require. We get an 8% return on the assets we invest. Pre-tax, those investors to invest risk money would require somewhere around the 20%. But before I ask Cannon on the commitments on off-takers, I need to say that the large power users, the 150, subsidize in terms of their tariff the rest of the users. But I'll hand over to Cannon on that specific commitment.
Correct. As Jessica said before, we do not have any special pricing agreements apart from those that are known. Those are the Billiton and our neighbors, Scorpion in Namibia. Every other customer, large customer, is in a standard contract, so there's no guaranteed offtake. There's only a certain conditions on quality of supply. So there's no guaranteed offtake with any customer at this moment.
Okay, in terms of the second question, was it related to the CSP and the wind plants, why they seem to be held up, what are we doing about it? To answer that question, when I say we're in the design and concept stage, in wind we're further along the mark, and the terminology I use is normal terminology. In other words, we must make sure that we have the right design, we must make sure that we are tendering for the right contractors, and we must make sure that we have the adequate funding in place before you just go. The mistake ESCOM has made in the past is we start projects and we actually haven't defined what it is we're actually going to do. So I can tell you that wind is being fast-tracked. We're in a process where designs are complete. We're now going out to market to tender, and we've been 10 fast-tracking. We have secured most of the funding. We look into the clean technology funds to secure the rest. In terms of solar, we've had the World Bank and the African Development Bank visits recently, so they're well in line with what, and it was a matter of them agreeing with the technology choices we need to make. So now that we're going through that process of technology choices, we can then fast-track what gets required from that perspective. Question three was around the skills, the capital expansion program, the skills required, and that seems to have come up a lot, and how does this tie to the new growth plan? Chair, if it's okay with you, there was a presentation done previously through our chief executive, I think to this committee, one of these committees. So we have a detailed plan of what we intend to do, and there is a perfect link between what we're trying to tell you today and the new growth plan. For example, the new skills are required in Medupe-Casile. There's new skills required in the maintenance of those plants. There's new skills required for some of the other projects that we're planning to build, the wind, the concentrated solar. Obviously, there'll be significant new skills required in the country when the country enters into a nuclear program, when the country enters into all those additional technologies that are required. So if I may, I'd prefer that we have a separate session on that, or we answer that particular question around the specific skills of ESCOM separately, if that's okay with the Chair. Thank you. In terms of question four, and it's asked a number of times, what is our expectation on the tariff? And we have spoken to both these subcommittees last year, and we have been very clear in the public about this. So let me just clarify. Our funding plan assumes that we firstly had 3 years of 25% starting in the calendar year 2010, 3 years of 25% increases on our tariffs. and that's been given to us by the regulator. We have assumed, and the regulator has indicated to us, in order to be cost reflective, we need a further 25% increases for another 2 years post that period, so through to calendar year 2014. After that, we will be at cost reflective tariff from an Eskom perspective, and the increases we will get thereafter should be inflationary. So we've always been very, very clear about that in our funding plan, and our funding plan assumes that. In terms of page 31 and the arithmetic calculation of the capex of 550 and the 300 billion, just to put that in perspective, we've got 550 billion rand of capital expenditure over the 7 years. You need to take off that the operating cash flows that will be generated by Eskom. So the operating cash flows after interest that are generated leaves you with a shortfall of 300 billion, which is for which we have a funding plan in place. Question six, why is there a gap in demand? Why are we where we are? I think that's been well documented in history. All we can say is management, we are where we are today, and we need to sort out what needs to be sorted out going forward. And we can't go back in history all the time to try and determine why did we end up here. In terms of seven, I'll hand over to Cullen. What is our approach to renewables? Why is our IPP program appear slow and not aggressive enough?
I think there's several parts, and it was also repeated. I think we've got to look at the history. The tariff previously was not attractive for independent power producers to come in, but also the regulatory and governance framework in the energy sector was not also conducive. It wasn't clear how you attract IPPs. So those are elements that have to be corrected. Just to give you an indication, our medium-term power purchase program, the IPP sign on at around 74 cents a kilowatt hour. That's publicly available. Our wind program would be 1 rand 25 a kilowatt hour, and the solar, concentrated solar, would be 2 rand 10. So that's what IPPs will require for a 20-year power purchase agreement, for example, with medium-term 7. So you can see it is higher still than our standard tariff. So that's how do you blend these new participants in. But as Eskom, we're very clear that even that we need independent power producers for several reasons. One is they bring new resources and skills into the market. They will come with new technologies and new ways of doing things. They will also allow for performance benchmarking, and that, I think, will also be important. So I think from our perspective, we have to do that. We have another reason we've got to attract them. We have a regulatory obligation as the transmission and distribution network owner to provide open access to the grid. And we are doing that, and we have published several documents over the last 2 years, been very transparent to IPPs. We've met with developers as recently as the 9th of February, and we're meeting them again in April to share with them these numbers, so they have all equal access to this information. We're trying our utmost to make it as easy as possible within the regulatory framework that we have. We cannot sign on IPPs. That is not our role. The role is clearly with the Department of Energy in conjunction with other partners. Once we're clear about which IPPs have to be signed on, we will then do our bit to connect them. So that's where we are with IPPs. We're ready to connect. We're ready to pay IPPs in the renewable space. So we are ready to go there.
My next question, eight, was also related to the new growth path, and Chair, as I said, we would prefer to answer that separately. Number nine, the theft of energy in South Africa and the calculation thereof. We've always disclosed that between demand and supply that we suffer around just under 9% of energy losses, of which about 5% we can attribute to technical losses, and the rest of that is non-technical losses. So it amounts to around 2 billion rand a year. That can't be explained specifically, but so within that factor would be theft. So that's the current cost. In terms of 70% from coal, why are we waiting till 2030 to extend Kuiberg? We're not. If you look at the integrated resource plan, the first units of the nuclear plant actually start coming in 2023. So it's not that it's waiting till 2030 to do that. So it's from 2023, the 9,600 megawatts that are required in the RP start to come in. And as our friends over there, EDF, will tell you, you have to start planning now to make sure that you get those coming on the grid then. So it's not pie in the sky. We have to really start planning now to make sure in 2023 we can deliver those first units onto the grid. I'll hand over the question 11 to Cannon, and it came up together. What about the risk we've seen in Japan, and how is Eskom dealing with it?
There are several elements to what is going on in Japan that we have to compare to South Africa. The first one is, what is the design of the plant? The Fukushima plant is a generation one technology. It's called a boil. Kuberg's plant is a generation two technology, which is a pressurized water reactor. So it's firstly different technologies. The second element is how do we deal with earthquakes? The Kuberg plant is built on a raft to withstand seven on the Richter scale earthquake. So you've got to look at what is the history of seismic activity in South Africa, and whether that design is sufficient. Every nuclear power station is built to what is called a safety case, and the safety case is based on looking at the environmental issues, looking at the past history of seismic activity, and so on. So that's Kuberg's case was built on that. We also, in terms of the problems at Fukushima, was also around what happened to the tsunami and the backup power. The nuclear power station needs electricity to make sure that the cooling water system works. That's one of the most critical elements of a nuclear power station, that the cooling water through the reactor core works. How does the Kuberg system work? Firstly, we have our primary source of electricity for Kuberg, which is our national grid. We have a dedicated source for Kuberg supplied by gas turbines at a 132 kV level, which is the distribution level. I won't say specifically all the sources from a national key point perspective. I can't do that. The third, then, requirement is we have then diesel generators on site, and then we also have further diesel generators at a higher elevation. So we have four layers of security to provide power for the cooling water system. We test them regularly. We have what we call self-start things. That means we simulate the loss of the grid and see if the gas turbine start up, then the diesel gen start up, and then the backups. We do that on a regular basis. All of this is overseen by the National Nuclear Regulator. They look at our safety case, and they also look at our tests. We also take part in peer reviews by the World Association of Nuclear Operators, who also come regularly to check us. So we go through that rigorous process. So there are some differences. Obviously, what's happening in Japan is a concern, and we have to keep reviewing our own practices in light of what we learn. But I just want to put forward what we are doing at Kuberg.
Question 12 about the sustainability of these jobs we were creating, and are we making it somebody else's problem? If I sat here today and said we have a solution, we don't. But what we do is we have a recognition that we need to do something about it. So we have a lot of these jobs that are created through our contractors themselves. And what we need to do is make sure that that program of adding the extra megawatts gets sustained in terms of the RP, and we sustain the skills that we are creating through what we're doing, and those can be carried forward. So we will work with the various industries to make sure that we can sustain what has been created. But as I said before, they are not direct employees of Eskom. In terms of the unpredictability of costs on the BOLT program, we acknowledge that. We acknowledge that. But where we sit here today with a funding plan in place, we have a much firmer idea on our costs. We have placed the majority of our contracts so we know exactly where we are. So those numbers that we're putting up in front of you are definitely the target by which we aim. And we spoke about updates to these subcommittees, and we're more than open annually when we present our financial results to tell you exactly where those costs to complete have gone to. But as we sit today, those are our best estimates of the costs to complete based on facts and circumstances of contracts that we've placed. In terms of question 14, BHP Billiton, I can't comment on the 15% of energy they take up, other than to say we have two remaining special pricing agreements. One is with Aluminium South Africa, and one is with Scorpion Zinc. And we sell electricity based on a commodity price and not electricity based on what we call our megaflex, which is our traditional price to other users. What is the value of that? The difference in cash flows of what the opportunity we're losing out as we sit today is around 6.5 billion rand over the periods of the contracts. However, the chief executive and myself committed to renegotiate these by the end of this financial year, and that is still our intent. So we have been in negotiations with both parties for a year, and we intend making sure that we eliminate the embedded derivatives on those particular contracts. And as we sit today, there's healthy negotiation going on between all parties. In terms of the slide 19 on the transport and the materials to site, what percentage is on rail and what percentage is on road, what discussions do we have with Transnet? I think because of the short-term, relatively short-term nature of what we're trying to do, a lot of that transport, unfortunately, is on our roads. So there is a lot of deterioration in the roads of getting from port to getting to our particular construction sites. And our relationship with Transnet is more focused on the longer-term coal supply, to get the coal off the roads and get the coal on the rail. So that's where our long-term focus is going forward. In terms of question 16 on slide 23, the percentage local content in heaters seems low. Is there any special, is it specialized? Is there any specific reason? I don't have that specific answer, and if I may, we can get back to you on that specifically. On question 17 on the heavy rains and the effect, I'll hand over to Cullen to answer that.
Based on what we went through in 2008, Eskom learned a lot of lessons. The first one is to have a healthy coal stockpile. You actually need to have enough coal. So we did that. The second thing we realized is that we've got to improve our handling of the wet coal. And the first step is to prevent it getting wet. But you can't do that easily. It's very difficult to build a big tent, if you will. So we did two things. The first one is we made sure we mixed the quality of coal. So you have big rock and a mix of smaller materials to make sure it's easier to handle. The second is our stockpiles. We treated them with various chemicals, if we can, or other material to help make it more, make it water resistant, if you will. And we tried those elements. The third thing is then we learned how to strengthen the way we transport the coal from our various storage areas, and we've improved those ability to do that. And then in two particular power stations, we had to also improve the particular coal quality we were getting from the mine, and we're focused on that. We started at the one station, which we have now concluded. So our experience over the last 2 years is that we have improved our handling of wet coal, and dealing with the consequences of heavy rain. We went through a period in the last 2 months, in December and January, where we had some of the heaviest rain we've seen since 2008, if not heavier, and we got through it. It was difficult, but the lessons we learned were applied, and we could see the results. We've learned some new lessons, but we went through it fairly successfully.
On question 18, I'll come back to, because it's back to Cannon, but question 19, the fleet of mothball plants, we have taken all the mothball plants that we can back into service, and that being Camden, Critflay, and Camati. All the rest are not worth investing the type of money you'd have to actually get them back into operation. On Cannon's for question is, globally, are we the only ones who have security of supply issues, and can you give examples of other countries?
Chair, there are actually very many countries that are facing the same challenges we have for different reasons. So Brazil, UK, and there are different reasons. Brazil is running out of power. UK haven't made their decisions on their next energy choice and are very dependent on natural gas. You have China and India who are struggling to keep up with their demand, and you'll see in China they've had actually rotational load shedding. You've seen now obviously Japan has had problems. Chile has a challenge because they invested heavily in gas. They were liberalized. They invested heavily in gas, and now the challenge is who's going to build a long-term base load station. The challenges in Europe around, as you go towards a greener economy, how do you make the transition? So they have a different challenge. So every country, based on where the energy policy is going, is actually facing significant choices and investment concerns. So we are not alone in doing that.
Okay, on the IPPs, what quantum of contribution do they have in the mix? I think Cannon has answered that adequately. Is there something else you'd like to add on that?
The one point I want to add is that government has clearly said that it would like to have 30% of the mix supplied by IPPs. In Eskom's own plans, that's our assumption we have made, and we're looking forward to that. We're hoping that by 2030 you can see that mix is clear.
Question 21 was on the artisan training, and again, I'd like to defer that to the bigger discussion about that our chief executive has given, and we would come back to this committee to answer that, because it really requires a whole separate session, in our opinion. Canon, if I can ask you to pick up the calculation of the 8% reserve margin, and how does that balance to what we're saying?
Sure, the honourable member was quite right. Within South Africa, it's about 41,500. What you've got to add to that is our imports from Cahora Bassa, which is 1,500 megawatts. And if you add that together, it's still not 15%. So that's why we're saying it's tight this year and also next year. But there is another 1,500 megawatts from our neighbour. Yes. But the demand is expected to be close to 38,000 megawatts unless the winter is warmer than we expect, as well as if there is a slowdown in economic growth, which at the moment we don't see. So those are the two variables.
Question 23 was on the issue raised again on Kuberg and the risks we've seen in Japan, and I think Canon has answered that. Question 24 was also related to the tariffs. What have we assumed? What escalations are we expecting? And I think we've given an indication of that. 25 was related to Hitachi, and we will agree with the chair and not comment on that particular issue. In terms of 26 was the gap at 2012, Canon, and how accessible is it for IPPs, and can they be used?
Chair, there's several things. One is Eskom has to work within, again, the regulatory environment as well as the tariff that it has got. That tariff has said that we must sign up 1,025 megawatts from renewables, at least 400 megawatts from cogeneration options, and 1,000 megawatts from an IPP gas turbine in the next 3 years. So Eskom has got the money to do that, but we are not running the procurement process except for the cogeneration. That is with the Department of Energy, so I can't comment on how quickly that could come on. But we're ready to connect those, and we're ready to pay for those. The challenge is now that they cannot contribute by 2012, some of them. Some of our customers said they could build their own plant, but that plant will only come online in the period 2014 to 2015, not as soon as 2012. So we are trying to secure whatever is available in the next 2 years through some of the initiatives, but there's very few plants that can come on by 2012.
The next question related to our international bonds and the worsening spreads that we're seeing, particularly which have been suffering with some of the countries that are suffering. We actually were very fortunate in our international bond. The benchmark is against US treasuries, and we achieved 250 basis points above that, very favorable. The South African, and that's very much in line. The South African, we were about 90 basis points above if our own sovereign went and issued. So it's a very, very good rate that we got. Our total cost of borrowings, if you take all our basket of debts, is around 9.7%, and those additional bonds that we secured didn't affect that overall borrowing basket too much. The question going forward is, of the remaining of the 90 billion less the 25 we've secured, when best do we approach that international market again at the right time? And obviously we need to be very careful about how we do that so that we don't end up with something that has an exorbitant cost to it. The next question, Canon, if you haven't answered it, is the involvement of IPPs, why not involved in the past, is the current tariff adequate?
I think I answered that question by sharing the details. If there are any follow-up questions, I think we can deal with that, Chair.
And sorry, Canon, if I can also take the water challenges.
Yeah, sure. Chair, the water challenges in Lephalale, let's start with Medupi itself as it is built. There's adequate water for the initial phase of Medupi. The challenge with Medupi is that once you start going into installing a plant to deal with the sulfur dioxide emissions, which is called flue gas desulfurization plant, you need a lot more water. It is for that we need to bring in water. Also, if you then need to build further coal mines, if you need to build any more plant like the coal to oil plant, that needs water. Those water needs are not yet addressed. That means there's water infrastructure that has to be built for the FGD expansion, plus further coal beneficiation, plus further manufacturing or coal to oil plants. So that's the next challenge. As Eskom, we have outlined our requirements to the Department of Water Affairs. They're very well aware of these needs, and they know what is needed to do it. It's just how do you get it done. because Eskom cannot carry the entire cost of that expansion because there are other users also that must contribute.
The next question is a very good question about the skills in the boiler and turbine industry. And I think the challenge for us is, considering this would be the last coal plants that will be built for a long period of time, what you've got to focus on in the boilers and the turbines is to create an industry of maintenance, because we're too reliant on the original equipment manufacturers for their maintenance skills. So it's really as Eskom, and we have programs that we've initiated that we can start growing the good old fitters and turners and the boiler and turbine industry that used to be in this country, and it's up to us to mobilize that. And we certainly have strategies so that we can wean ourselves off the dependency on foreign OEMs to do this. In terms of the next question, 31, was on job creation, the potential for increasing, and again, I would defer that to a more detailed discussion. On question 32, the challenge of distribution, it's massive. Within our 550 billion of capital that needs to be spent over the next 7 years, there's a significant amount for Eskom's own distribution that has to be spent to make sure that we have the right strengthening of the distribution network. Some of our what we call our SAIDI and our SAIFI, which is the duration a customer is out and the frequency which they are out, are above the standards that we require. And so we need to strengthen those networks. But if you consider that more than 50% of our sales goes to the municipality, they then redistribute. A big challenge lies within what they need to do as well. So we don't have specific solutions on the table today for what the municipalities need to do. Gunnel, I'll ask you to pick up the solar water heater challenge and also how we can make it more accessible.
Chair, I think in terms of the specific numbers, provinces, we can get back to you. I don't have the numbers off the top of our heads, but we do keep those statistics, and we can share with you where we're rolling out two types of programs. The one is for the high-end consumer who can afford it, and the second is for the low-income households where we give them where there's a mass rollout of solar water geysers. So we have both those programs running, and we can share with you those details in a written reply if that's easier. In terms of making it more accessible, I'm sorry that you couldn't meet an Eskom. We've got an Eskom interface to get your answer. We have, if I stand corrected, nearly 400 suppliers now. Obviously, if you've got our database on Eskom website, we also have a list, and there's a process outlined there. I think we need to figure out how to make it more accessible to those who don't have the internet, for example. So maybe that's something we're going to take under consideration and maybe address some specific requests, if there's specific requests through our parliamentary liaison. Let's look at your area and we can give you in your area how can we address your concerns.
The next question is on wind power on Table Mountain. I've also wondered about that, so I'll hand over to my engineering colleague to tell us.
Chair, we can build. Eskom doesn't mind where you build. The challenge is where the IPP is. There's a few issues. The one is the choice of where you build is informed by regulatory requirements and environmental impact assessments that Eskom is not in control of. So if the city of Cape Town is happy for one to build on Table Mountain, that is their choice, and the Department of Environmental Affairs must also be involved. The other issue is how close are you to the transmission or distribution network to connect. The further away you are, the more expensive it will be. So as long as you're happy with those two issues, you can connect anywhere. The wind resources in South Africa are starting to be mapped. On the east, west, and northern parts, or northern capes, there's a fair amount of knowledge. The rest of the country is still vague. The Department of Energy has commissioned a wind atlas study that hopefully will be published later this year. But a lot of IPPs and Eskom itself has done a lot of studies. We've made it publicly available. So you have a fairly good idea of where to connect. So that's open information. If you don't know where it is, I can share with you the sites and information.
The next question was on the Kusile, and the 56% of local seems a bit low compared to perhaps Madupi and Ngula. There's no specific reason for that. So the contracts we've placed, as much as we can localize, we have. So I don't have a specific explanation as to that percentage being lower than the 60% that the others are on. And then the last two questions was, I'll ask Kanna to talk about, if I understood it right, Chair, about the fragmentation of the supply and the municipalities. But I'll just talk the last question, question 38, which was on quarterly updates. We intend as Eskom that certainly our chief executive will give quarterly updates to the country on where we see the tightness of supply. So I'm sure through Chosay we can facilitate how we get to these subcommittees. But I'd also like to alert the subcommittees to the fact that we come out with our financial results twice a year as well. We come out with our year-end results, and we also come out with our interim results. And, you know, we did present our full financial results last year to the subcommittees. We'd like to come and present our interim results as well in future, so that there's more interaction and giving you an exact update to, as to where we are. And I'll ask Kenneth to take the last question, which was number 37. Yeah.
Chair, I'm not sure if I answered the question correctly. My understanding is with the municipality, with so many municipalities around, how do you ensure that they have adequate security of supply, and how do you ensure there's adequate investment? I think it's difficult for Eskom to comment. Obviously, where we are responsible for supply, we will take that accountability. But we cannot take the accountability for municipalities where we are not accountable for supply. And that is something the Department of Energy would probably be better placed to answer rather than ourselves on that one. Our role is to help where we can. We try to offer help, assistance, but we also have to work within limitation of our own resources in that regard.
But I think that brings to an end the first round, and hopefully the members are satisfied with the answers.
Honourable members, I'm looking at the time. We have other things to handle as well before we break for lunch, so I'll definitely allow one question per member. Let's just go down from this side. That is Lau, Mloto, Khadebe, Mutau, Ross, Mukwena, Van Dalen. Am I correct? I got it. Okay, Van Dalen, Grayling, and then Minel Koronov, you'll close.
Chairperson, I'll choose one as directed. On the distribution challenges, the areas I was looking at was the outstanding electrification to reach the, what do we call that? Universal access versus the current supply gap. Do we have an alternative to deal with that situation other than focusing on the coal-generated electricity? Something crosses my mind to look at whether renewables, gas, diesel generators, and so on could be considered. But I stand to be corrected.
Chairperson, thank you. I agree and acknowledge that you have managed to tackle all your coal challenges. But just taking a long-term view, are you confident that you'll be able to secure the necessary coal for your power station, given that there's massive demand from China and India?
Thank you, Chair. the question that I have is that in terms of your job sustainable program, I'm just looking in terms of, as I say, you are looking in terms of the maintenance aspects of it. Because I'm trying to look at your collaboration with the municipalities, because of most of their infrastructure is depleting day-to-day basis in terms of your, you know, ensuring that at least there's sustainable electricity program. Right? But the other thing, I'm just looking in terms of your cooperation or your collaboration with the Department of Higher Education and Training, in terms of your skills development, because I've just noticed that you've got some other sectors that you also involve, universities that are involved into this plan. Because I'm looking in terms of you know, collaborating with that department in terms of the NSDS 3, because it's very much important that you must be able to line up yourself within that aspect. Lastly, Chair, in terms of your expansion program, of nuclear. I'm trying to check what's holding you. Why can't you expand your nuclear program at the Kano State? Thanks.
You caught me there because I said one question.
I know. Well, fortunately, I didn't ask earlier, so it was my opportunity to expand.
Typical of you. He caught me off guard. Apologies.
Thank you, Chair. Just a quick one. It's a serious concern, and I know we're all concerned about it. And the case in the Johannesburg High Court just reminded me again where these two guys have been, I believe, rightfully convicted. And now their lawyer says he's going to argue that the electricity cannot be stolen. And I know we are working on criminalizing the theft of electricity. How far are we with that?
Thank you, Chair. Mine is just a comment regarding the loss of electricity on the dysfunctional lines, and I'm referring to the lines within the municipality's jurisdiction. Half the EDI report indicated that half the network is dysfunctional, and I think we have to look at the electricity losses on that. And I don't think I'm referring to the direct supply, in which you supply 45% direct, but to the 50% in terms of the municipality's jurisdiction. And we have to come up with some plan, even if it's negotiations for COCTA or somebody. But in fact, that we're seeing a lot of decay in this regard, and I think there's a huge electricity loss. Thank you.
Chairperson, just a quick one. municipalities, there is this Exxon problem of billing, and which has got implications, very serious implications to destabilize society. Now, Eskom is a purveyor of electricity to many of these municipalities. And now the question is, Chairperson, to what extent, after just applying, do you actually sit down with their CFOs and assist them with the billing strategies so that even if they derive revenue to sustain themselves, they do not choke the rate payers, who will then resist to pay, and then that will have a consequence of them as municipalities not being able to actually pay you back as ESCOM. Right. So to what extent do you should just pay electricity and then leave it them to their own devices, and then the problem arises. So I would like to get a crisp answer to that. Sorry.
Chairperson, just to say that the presentation was flowing very good for me, and your concluding remarks were saying that good progress to this point has been made, until you said, but there are very serious risks that need to be managed. Now, I'm toying around the magnitude of those risks now. Can you share that with us? Thank you very much.
Yes, Mr. Kloppers, the CEO of BHP Billiton, in his AGM speech said that BHP Billiton is the net benefactor from the higher energy price. So they are making profits. Of the higher the price goes, the higher the profits they are making. And they're making it on the back of the poor in South Africa because they're having these special pricing agreements. So, and then you said you are renegotiating the embedded derivatives. And will they be going on the cheapest rate, which is the Megaflex rate, or will they still be getting electricity after the renegotiations at the below cost of generation rate? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I mean, mine's not a new question. It's just that my question regarding energy efficiency and whether we need comprehensive legislation and whether you would support that in terms of making them mandatory.
I think one of the most valuable inputs that you made today, if I think about 2 years ago when you appeared before us, when you didn't have a funding plan in place, is that your funding plan is in place. And I think or the majority is secured, and that the money is placed, and now you need to focus on the execution. I think it's a major step forward, and this for me demonstrates the new attitude and leadership style that you have. in Eskom in providing a new vision, sharing openly with the country and Parliament, and I think you need to be commended on that. It's a new, fresh approach, and I think we as members of Parliament welcome that, and I think the public outside should also welcome your new approach. I think it's refreshing to see that. I want to make a suggestion that on the this year we're going to focus on all SOEs on job creation and skills development, and I think what we should do as at least the line function portfolio committee on public enterprises to interact with you on a regular basis throughout 2011 on your rollout of job creation and skills development. So I agree with you that we don't answer it here, but on the rollout in the balance of the year, that we interact with you on a continuous basis to monitor what you tell Parliament and how you make progress in job creation and skills development. The similar, same goes for infrastructure development rollout. It's a massive energy rollout program that you're busy with in the next couple of years, and I suggest we also interact with you on a continuous basis about your investment rollout. And then you must appreciate what a blessing to belong to different political parties. And that we don't belong to one party. It'll be a very boring place if we talk the same language. Thank you.
Well, we put one of your relatives in
house. What a nice way to round up the question time. Oh, Nangan Moshaloma. Okay, well.
Thanks, Chair. I'll speak as a mother also. Mine is on energy, conservation. I think if you implement that project, you also need to take us along so that we all educate people on how to save electricity. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I think the additional questions, 11 of them, and apologies for not answering the energy. I don't know where I lost that in my counting. But let's answer that one first, the energy efficiency, the legislation, and maybe to comment on the remarks made about bringing everybody along on conservation.
Chair, there's two elements of legislation that Eskom would welcome. The first one is legislation that would really enforce energy efficiency standards, and there's already some good work there. And if more can be done, it will just strengthen the culture. The second is legislation is required of some sort, either regulation or legislation, to make sure that you have a mandatory scheme. So that is definitely outside the control of Eskom. That's why we say we'd like a mandatory scheme, but if it doesn't work out, let's look at a voluntary scheme, because Eskom cannot enforce that. So in both areas, there's scope for Parliament to support the drive for energy efficiency, one on standards, and the second is on a conservation scheme. We have suggestions if that's needed.
The next question, Chair, was around the outstanding electrification and the universal access comment.
Chair, as you know, Eskom itself is only part of the solution. Also, municipalities control certain supply areas. But within Eskom, we estimate that we have to deal with about 2.5 million houses that need to be electrified, and we assume there'll be growth. So we've taken a 10 to 20 year view what is needed. What we are now trying to figure out is how do we accelerate that electrification program. So that's what we're working on. But also there's municipalities that also need to electrify. I don't have the final number of what their backlog is. Is there alternatives? In the past, we've done both. We've done what is called grid electrification and off-grid. The Department of Energy at one stage even offered concessions. They said, this is an area we want for off-grid. You can use whatever you want, PV, photovoltaic, mini hydro. And we found that many customers, after initially getting on, they felt the quality of supply was not good enough and they still wanted grid. So that's the challenge, that if you go for mini-grid, you must accept, or off-grid, you must accept some level of lifestyle initially until the grid comes. So this is a challenge. That was past experience.
We are still actively looking at whether there's off-grid solutions possible, and we always compare that to connecting by grid. Both of them have risen in costs because we are now dealing with the far rural areas, and it's either too far away or there's not enough consumers living close together to make a mini-grid or off-grid supplies viable. So that's the challenge we're facing, how to make it viable. So that's where we are at the moment, without going into all the details.
The next question was on the coal challenges, and I know our Chief Commercial Officer, Dan Morricone, has addressed this committees before, but just at a high level, we don't have all the coal contracts secured until the end of the life of our mines. We have the majority secured, but we don't have all of it secured. Approximately 75% of our coal contracts are longer than 10 years, so we have some level of certainty in our judgment. And a large portion of those are our cost-plus mines, where effectively the mine is operating on our behalf to supply the coal. So coal will remain a significant challenge going forward and will always remain a high risk, and we'll talk about those risks just now, but it's something we have to pay constant attention to make sure that we get the right price. If you think that in our current operating cash operating costs, that the primary energy, which includes coal, is half our operating costs. So it gives you the extent any variance in that costs the consumer at the end of the day. In terms of, there were three questions that are very good questions on our collaboration with municipalities. The one was around the jobs and because of the distribution issues they have. The one was around their dysfunctional networks and what are we doing about it. And the other was around their billing, which thankfully I'm glad to say I'm not part of. I think it's a major challenge, and I think this is where Eskom, we don't have a clear plan on how we need to work with the municipalities. There's no doubt we have to, and our CEO is driving us to find solutions of how we can work better with municipalities from a skills transfer, from a cash management, from a billing management, from a boosting of distribution networks. But we also have to make sure we focus as Eskom in delivering what we said in front of you. We also must make sure we don't take our eyes off the ball. So we can't just take our cash and transfer it across. But there is a solution there somewhere. So perhaps it's one of the topics that we can continue to engage with over the next year on the collaboration with those municipalities. In terms of the how far we with criminalization of electricity theft, can I?
Chair, I don't have all the details. I know that we've as Eskom worked on ourselves proposals for legislation, and we have engaged with various departments. I think it is something that needs to be done to strengthen the fight against electricity theft. So at the moment, for example, you've got to charge people in terms of fraud or vandalism or theft of equipment rather than theft of electricity. So that's the challenge we face. So we'd also welcome, I suppose, legislation that criminalizes electricity theft in particular, because that's not the case at the moment.
I haven't forgotten the question on our collaboration with the higher education department. I think, again, I'd like to bring that into the broader discussion we have when we talk about skills and how we can get alignment and we can get the right people from Eskom to talk about that. Risks. You know, what keeps us awake at night? Lots of things. Making sure this Medupi comes on time is, you know, the complexity of this I cannot overstate. But from our side, it's about the tariff I spoke about, the additional 25% we require for an additional 2 years. It's the coal risk and managing the prices. It's about the cost of the Big Bill program, making sure that we deliver on time, on project. It's about the value chain behind the municipalities. You're 100% right. If we redistribute and that just collapses, then where does it leave us as Eskom? So from my perspective, as the financial director, those are the things that really concern me. I mean, Cannon, from an engineering perspective.
Chair, I think from the risks that you see in the electricity infrastructure start with, we have a middle-aged plant. Our generation fleet is in its middle age, so we need to do a lot of maintenance, which we know, and we know how to do it. We just need to find the space to do it, and that's the one risk. If we don't do that, then you have a vicious cycle of poor plant performance going forward. So we've got to make sure we do enough maintenance to give sustainable performance. The demand growth, we even low or high, either way is a challenge. If we under forecast, then you might not take up the opportunity to do maintenance, but you also might then have challenges in funding. But if it's too high, then you have challenges in terms of meeting security supply, and you might stifle growth. So it's about forecasting that, getting more certainty, and managing it properly. The third element that we have is that even after you secure coal, you need to make sure it gets to the power stations, and that's the other risk, making sure that coal gets to the power stations in the next 2 years to make sure we keep the stockpiles that we need. So that is probably another area that we should manage.
On the question of BHP again, I certainly can't comment on what the CEO of BHP, or in fact the CEO of Murray Roberts, has to say about Eskom. However, what I will say is that the way Eskom approaches this is we are engaging on a commercial basis with a customer who has a valid legal agreement. And the only negotiations we can do is commercial. If there's some other negotiations of legislation, that's a separate issue. So on a commercial basis, we have to ensure that Eskom gets paid a price for electricity in rands that's higher than the operating costs. That's our mandate. And that's what we're attempting to secure by the end of this month or soon thereafter. Thank you for the comments on the funding plan. Those are appreciated. The engagement going forward on job creation, I think everybody, I mean, this is a major topic. I don't feel qualified enough or have the right information to talk, and I think a separate session and engage regularly with yourselves, set ourselves some targets, tell you how we're doing, I think that's the appropriate way to deal with that going forward, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think that was a fair amount of presentation and response from Eskom side. Honourable members, I will just make a few closing remarks on this matter. I think what we can say is that what is striking from Eskom is an honest and realistic approach. I think Honourable Koronov, as a veteran of Eskom, has aptly articulated that. Because some of us just relate to Eskom, or you know, until now through just distance reports and media and that sort of thing. Particularly that Eskom has been able to articulate what is achievable. I sense your confidence. Not that it means one is 100%. Satisfied with that. In fact, that links up with the second comment from me that rest assured there will always be firmness and exactitude in our oversight work. We won't back down on that. But we're also mindful of broader but related activities which demand an integrated approach. Hence, we find that in a number of instances, honorable members are asking about municipalities, jobs, skills. Hence, we take your point that we need to handle the skills development issue separately, because the CETAs and other institutions that provide skills are not necessarily located within ESCOM. And I've observed that there were markedly different opinions, but I'm sure what would agree is that there should be balanced oversight. Sometimes to hammer people until they feel that they don't feel like looking forward to come back wouldn't be helpful. My humble appeal is that our approach to Eskom should not necessarily be adversarial, but should be equally firm, penetrative. We should be always alert. Definitely, honorable members. And I'm sure also media, in its full force today, will join hands with us. Because this is a topical issue, at times pretty sensitive, at times used as a political football, up to the extent of scaremongering, honestly. However, I would like also to take into account the nuclear factor vis-a-vis Fukushima. I'm sure the committee will try and handle that, in our planning as to how would we factor that in? Will we make it part of IRP2 rejoinder, or would we make it you know, oversight work that we do in the past. It's important, you know, because that has triggered, you know, something on it. But we should handle it as leaders, not scaremongering once again. Also, what has, you know, come up very, very strikingly to me that is the way we should structure oversight work on ESCOM vis-a-vis the overall oversight work. Because we need to check on how the government is unfolding energy mix, particularly your IRP, you know, as well as your IEP down the line. I mean, we're expecting the cabinet very, very soon to present its integrated energy plan, you know. To me, every time we look at this, we should see the primary generator and distributor of energy in South Africa. How is it strategically located on that? And that leads me to what I hope members would admire today, that of joint efforts between various portfolio committees, which obviously would have to extend to the NCOP down the line, so that we don't duplicate, because we may end up dissipating your energies. Much as you are supposed to come and, you know, account here, you know, we can't make you move back and forth into this, you know, political catacombs. You've got work to do. You've got targets to achieve as well. So I'm sure Minir Kononoff and Tate Mloto, you will definitely work, you know, together as to how we work out, you know, things in future, you know, so that we really have, you know, quite a simulated and an integrated approach on oversight work. It's actually appropriate to also re-emphasize the fact that working together, we can achieve more. Why and how? There are 140 volunteers from the private sector who have already achieved 5%. Then the question should be to us, how do we reinforce that? How do we enhance that? One thing that struck me, which has been introduced by the private sector, is energy managers. You know, it's worth mentioning. I mean, I'm sure commercially or naively, people say, what does an energy manager got to do in a company? But when you look at the long-term benefits of energy efficiency, I'm sure we'll all be going home smiling on that. Lastly, the next session with ESCOM, I'm sure we'll work out with the other committee, public enterprise, given that our programs are fairly full, but we'll have to energy, let's consult with the, you know, public enterprise, and let's consult with the Speaker's office. And if I've captured the issues well, pretty well, is the skills development and also its collaboration with municipalities. Yes, I almost bounced on you because I was going to complain you're changing on us, but at least you got off the hook at the end, you know, and then tried to explain, because that's one open flank or Achilles heel at this stage in time. We should be honest, honorable members. Interaction, collaboration with municipalities, who ideally appear as very ideal, you know, in distribution of electricity, but in real situation, it's another kettle of fish, you know. I would also suggest that one other area we need to look into once again is efficiency. I think it should be an ongoing thing, because if I can share with you my experience in Copenhagen, when we went there for COP15, was the way the Danish were beating their chest and proud of themselves about how they've maintained energy efficiency for years. So there's quite a huge opportunity for us to look into that. That be the case, let me thank everybody, ESCOM, honorable members, the media, and the staff up to now. We have dispensed with the first item. Now we have to look at our own items. ESCOM?
Thank you very much, and members of your committee. You will see that in our presentation, the three slides that we did not talk to, the last slides, because this is what is coming on Friday, ESCOM, in conjunction with the Deputy President,
will be launching a big energy saving movement or campaign called 49 Million. It will be done on Friday, and the information is in your slides there. Thank you.
Other people are rushing for deadlines to submit articles. So let's give them a minute just to move off. Yeah, all energy members, Wahais. Yeah, we're going to look at our reports in a minute. Otherwise, once again, honorable members from Public Enterprise, thanks very much. Honourable members, let's settle before others disappear. I'm hungry. The meeting is still on. Honorable members, we had outstanding reports to conclude from last year. One report was the brief on the hydroelectric power study tour in Lesotho last year. Honorable Slau, Honorable Moss, Honorable Mtau were present or were part of the delegation. I trust and hope they've done their best to go through the report. Can you get any input from them? Oh, we did. You see, my secretary, I'm so diligently keen that we dispense with this report. Now, the other one, which was the Ghana trip, we are having a hassle once again because it was attended by Honorable Tabete, Lucas, and Tinto. Now, Honorable Lucas is not around. Yeah, can you make it stand over? Are we done with minutes first? We all are done with minutes. They've been adopted in the past. But Mr. Gwebu, you owe us minutes for this year. I would like us to insist, in fact, it's my duty, you know, but I just want to make sure that the collective support on that. We shouldn't allow, or I should not allow, once again, I should not allow a long time between minutes to be adopted. Because by the time, even you're going out there, you're rushing for another meeting. So you've got one human brain, you know. You've got to have a certain amount of time to before, you know, the whole memory flashes out, you know. I'm saying to you, Mr. Kwebe, in front of all the honorable members here, let's try to make a double effort for our Ndinges to be to come in and minutes to be presented. We need to sit down and work out a very reasonable amount of time on that. Can I remind members of the joint meeting tomorrow with the Portfolio Committee for Mineral Resources at Committee Room 1, Ground Floor, 120 Plain Street, from 9 o'clock. The reason why we're joining them is because Petroleum Agency South Africa will be presenting its annual report, which is not necessarily much for us, but I'm sure, because they are an exploration agency who might be keen here and there on which areas they explore energy issues. However, the main thing for us is the gas exploration on the Karoo region. That's what attracts us there. And as members, we are busy and torn apart with all our other duties. But I really would appeal that we do our best to go there. The meeting starts at 10 o'clock, but I'm informed by the committee secretary that it's best to be around there at around 10 o'clock. And Mr. Gwebu, please make sure that you're very accurate on that. If you sniff any slight change, you've got all our cell phones and use an SMS system to make sure that at least even if we miss it, we miss it by 5-10 minutes only. That is the briefing by PASA. That's the main area that we want to do. Otherwise, honorable members, thanks very much. Although I was joking about intimidation, but I was really struck about the fact that the media was out in full force. And also, once again, you know, to the other committee, I hope we'll reciprocate this kind of support. Of course, it's a joint effort, you know. It's good that we work together like this on something that is so important, you know. Hopefully then we will work out in our planning really on the next session, you know, of ESCOM, as I have said, you know. But let's also make sure that we reflect on the MINEX, we take all documents, we check out, so that we are able to avoid any repetition on issues we want to focus on, so that in every oversight step we take complements the previous one, so that at the end of the day we have an overall picture of how far is ESCOM, you know, rolling out its plan, how does it integrate in the overall IRP. I would like to emphasize that, honorable members, because this is one component, you know, of it, and it has to be seen how it integrates and influences others. Otherwise, thank you very much for today. The meeting stands adjourned.